I'm here in England, in Yorkshire, and I'm sitting with some very interesting person. Actually, I have to ask if he is a human. He's part human, but I hear that you are a hybrid, so you're not just human. Simon Parks is with me, and he's pretty well known in this area. You are in politics also. Can you introduce yourself? What are you, and what's your background?
Certainly. Well, first of all, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for coming and doing the interview. It's very good. You're a nice person, and I only do interviews with nice people. For those who don't know me, I suppose the best thing to start off with would be to say that I come from a family that's been with the espionage side, with MI5, MI6, National Security Agencies. Yes. So having parents that were in that sort of environment, in that field, I suppose I was always going to grow up.
Also Freemasons and so on? Or?
My grandfather was.
Okay.
Yes, I think in those days women weren't allowed to join, so my mother wasn't. But my grandfather certainly was. Mm-hmm. So having come from a family like that, then you are going to be different to a certain extent anyway.
Yeah.
In terms of who I am, what I am, I think when we talk about hybrids, we tend to think of a very stylized head. So a person who has a head like a grey.
Yeah.
And with a great big bulging back.
Yes.
This tends to be it. But you're right, hybridization of human bodies is brought about because when a soul enters a body, particularly of a child in its mother's womb, you have to ensure that the energies around that body are matching the expected soul.
Hmm.
Because if you don't do that, then the frequency of the soul will be different from the frequency of the body.
And that's that why, does not work?
Well, that's why many, many women say that something happened to their pregnancy. Maybe the baby was taken out and put back in again.
Okay.
That's generally done for a good reason, in the sense that it's making sure that, like you've said, that the soul and the body work. So I suppose it can be described as a hybrid, but not in the traditional sense.
Not in DNA, but a soul?
My soul is one third. I'm trying to think for European, that would be 33.3%.
Yes. Yes.
A third reptilian, Draco reptilian,
mm-hmm.
one third mantid or mantis, and one third hollow earth human.
Hollow earth human.
Yep. So that's the soul. Mm. The physical body will be energetically very reptilian-like, but I don't look like a hybrid simply because the more you look like a hybrid, the harder it is to get about the planet you're on.
Okay, let me ask, reptilians we can imagine, mantis, less people I think have heard about. What kind of a species is that?
They're less well known. They look very insectoid.
Mm-hmm.
And many people who have mantis experiences are very scared of wasps because they remind them of mantis. Mm-hmm. Mantis, I think between 6 foot and 8 foot tall, very hard sort of body. Eyes take up maybe nearly a quarter to a third of the head. So very insectoid looking, divided into three groups.
Walking upright,
yes.
Like humans?
Absolutely. Or? Yeah. Humanoid. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So don't think of an insect body with the thorax and the abdomen and the legs sticking out the side. They have proper hips.
Okay.
So they are very humanoid.
Okay.
But they are a very ancient race. And they have a job title, such as the Universal Master,
mm-hmm.
and they play the referee in disputes. So wherever there's a difficulty, this is in the fourth frequency, in the fourth dimension, then they would basically go in and try and make an arrangement between the warring parties.
Okay, now we have three species, not from humankind that we know of. You have mentioned the Hollow Earth. Do you have access to the knowledge, the background, or how did you grow up? You grow up like a normal child, and after a while your parents tell you, you're not just a human, you are, or have you been aware of all that?
I wasn't aware of all of it, no. Not at all of it. I certainly knew from a very young age that I had these odd creatures that would come to visit me, as a child. I certainly knew about practicing magic because that's what we did.
Mm-hmm. In the family?
Yes, yes, but not black magic. My mother was not a Satanist, so we were not allowed to have any satanic material in the house because she was against that, that end of it. But my grandfather was the other way. My grandfather believed in the black magic. And my grandfather, these are my biological parents, grandparents and parent, would always argue how I should be brought up. So they would have different ideas how I should be schooled and done. So, yes, interesting. I was aware of the creatures that would visit me. I would remember what had happened. I learned not to talk about it outside of the house.
But, sorry, Lena, I interrupt you all the time, but there's so many questions coming up. Other kids grow up and they see monsters and parents say, there are no monsters, okay. So after a while they don't see anything anymore. How has it been in your family when you say, when you saw something, did they say, yeah, that's real? Or
What my mother said was, draw it and I'll take it to my friends and show them. So I would draw it with crayons and felt pens and paper, and then she would take them into the people she worked with, and that's how it was.
Do you have some of those pictures?
Yes, but yeah, you didn't ask me to bring them. If you'd asked me to bring them, I'd have brought them.
Maybe we get some and can insert them later, okay?
Sure.
Yeah. So, what are you really aware of now, or how did you learn about these species? Is it something you know, or is it something you had to learn, what Hollow Earth people are? Or
what I had to learn was the culture, the rules, the law for each group. But in terms of the natural situation within that group, that is my right, because that is what I am. But every group has its own etiquette, its own rules, specifically the reptilian, which is very, very into ceremony and ritual, and you cannot make a mistake in there. I remember once meeting somebody who, a very genuine person, who had experienced the reptilians. Reptilians are very, very involved with the sword. The sword is very important to them. And one of the tests that you have to do is to throw the sword up in the air so it spins, and then as it drops, you're not allowed to go back from it. You have to catch the hilt of the sword. If you don't catch the hilt and it falls, but you don't move, that's okay. What's wrong is if you move from it. And he didn't catch the sword, and he said that that was it, that was the end. It was terrible shame, great embarrassment, and he brought shame on that particular unit. And so if he was out of the program, they didn't want to see him anymore. So very, very strict, no forgiving, not no forgiveness at all with that particular race.
Okay, now you're talking about MI5, MI6, with your family background. Stupid questions, does everybody in this area have connections with aliens, or is it special, or is it on some level of military intelligence that you know about these things?
No, I would think in any security agency, maybe only 10% to a quarter.
The high ranks.
Not just the high ranks, but it's called a need to know. You may have a specialism in a subject. You may be somebody who understands computers really well. So they would want you on the program cracking alien communications. So you would be briefed and talked to. So it's about what you bring to the organization. So MI5, National Security Agency, will say, what do we need? What skills do we need?
But no one gets the big picture, or only very few people.
Yes, because if you have the big picture, then you can begin to put it together and understand what's happening, and then you become very dangerous to the organization. In fact, the Americans and the British learnt with this compartmentalization from the Germans. In 1936-37, when the Germans were building what became the Fritz X bomb, the first radio-controlled or TV-controlled bomb, guided bomb. And I think the Germans sank an Italian battleship with it. The three German companies working on it, and because they were three separate Gesellschaft, what they did was They compartmentalized all the teams, so no team from one company could talk to the team of the other company. And that set the model right through to this day. So that's where it comes from.
So we need to know it's just the English, the good impression, the short word for it, but it was invented back then.
Absolutely.
And nobody knew that they were building a bomb, or what?
The only people who knew they were building a bomb were the people at the end of the line who actually had the device on chains, because that's how they used to do it, and have it suspended from the ceiling. But the guys who were working on the TV camera, they wouldn't necessarily know. The people on the homing device wouldn't know. It's only when you looked at the casing of the device that was obvious that it was a device, a bomb.
But they had all the technology in 1936, TV and homing.
Yes, they certainly did. So the Germans were the greatest inventors and absolutely ahead of their game. But then they'd had back-engineered equipment that they'd had
from aliens.
A crash in the Black Forest, probably about between 31 and 33, but then also the channeling from the Aldebaran group, the Vril Society and Trull Society. So they were getting help, but they were brilliant because they put it into practice.
It's not easy to find out if you find a piece of technology you don't know anything about it.
Well, this is what my mother did. This is my job of my mother when she worked for MI5. Her job, she received documents in German from ex-German paperclip scientists who didn't fall into the hands of the Russians, who didn't want to go to America and wanted to stay in Berlin, and what was the British quarter of Berlin. But under the new federal law, they should have been arrested and tried in Nuremberg for war crimes. But they were too important because of their knowledge. So the new West German government made them stateless, and MI5 gave them British sovereignty, managed them so that they couldn't be tried under German law. They remained in Germany. And when the major group of German scientists in America were overworked or couldn't handle a particular project, piece of alien equipment would be sent to West Germany, to Berlin. The scientists would look at it, and the brief was always the same. What is this? What does it do? Can you make it do that? And they would then produce a document, never big, between 6-7 pages and 15 pages, blueprints, maps, all in German, which would arrive, and the agent would bring it to my mother with, in those days, it was called a dictaphone. And you used to put your foot on a pedal to make a tape. Interesting, mother only wanted German equipment, so the typewriter she had was an Adler and Grundig. Everything was German. You wouldn't have anything other than German equipment because it was the best. And the guy who would give her the tape was a linguist. So he would say one sentence in German, one sentence in English. She would type out into English this document. And then when the document was finished, a car would arrive for her. She'd have a pass code words with the driver, get in the car, and off she'd go with it. This is the funny bit. Monday to Friday, I was a schoolboy. I went to school. Saturday and Sunday, mother worked at home. I didn't.
You're watching her?
Well, she would stop for lunch. She would leave the document on the table and go and have a lunch, and I would read it. So for about 5 or 6 years, and we just read all the documents. And it was obviously deliberate, because when the agent, whose name was Paul Dunlop, that wasn't his real name, a real character, ex-RAF fighter pilot, had his own private aeroplane, had his own racing car, and his own other cars, and he took his name off a tyre. So he said, my name is going to be Paul Dunlop, exactly. And he made a joke of it. But what was interesting, I would be about 7 years old, and he would come to the house. He was a brilliant man. I mean, maybe 12 languages, 15 languages, absolutely brilliant man. And my mother would go and make a cup of coffee, and then he would play with me. So we would lay chairs out, and we would play aeroplanes. And he would be the fighter pilot. I would be his co-pilot. And the game we would play would be chase the UFO. So we would play that. Mother would come in with a coffee, but he wouldn't jump up and be embarrassed. he would just carry on the game until we finished a point. And the only time I was ever asked to leave the room was when Mother signed the Official Secrets Act. Mm-hmm. And I later learned there's some rule in Britain that the only people who can be there is the agent and the person. Everyone else has to leave the room. But every other time, they would have a conversation about Roswell, about space weapons, whatever, and I was never asked to leave the room. So now I look back on it now, this isn't by chance. Mm. This was deliberate. Mm. But at the time, I just accepted it.
Was it your mother who wanted you to know all these things, yeah. or is it...
That was the rules. Because whenever a television program, an ordinary television program would come on that they wanted me to watch, they would say to my mother, you must let him watch this. He has to watch this television program. One of them was a program called The Prisoner, which went out, I think, on Friday for the first time in 1967 or 1968. And that was late. It was at 9 o'clock at night. And that was past my bedtime. Yeah. But Mother said, you know, you have to watch this. They want you to watch it. So I would watch all the series of The Prisoner. And the other one was The Avengers. Yeah. I had to watch The Avengers.
I like them.
Yeah. So this was an instructions coming from them that that's what they wanted. It was part of the plan. Now, what is? I know you want to ask a question, but the other interesting, I was only talking to a woman the other week who, in America, and her father worked for the CIA, and she was also made to watch The Avengers and The Prisoner. So clearly, for certain families in Britain, America, and it must be in Europe as well, this was something that you had to do. And there's a pattern forming here. So I find that very, very fascinating.
Yeah, fascinating is everything. Let me go back to the Germans who found a crashed UFO in the Schwarzwald. And what kind of species was that? Were there survivors, alien beings, or just...
No, the whole object was to give technology. You see, it is illegal from a universal standpoint to give a lower race technology. You can't do that. But what you do is you give it as a present.
So it was an accident?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Mm. So that you can't claim to be giving them the technology. So it would be from a grey type race working on behalf of a reptilian group, possibly in a group from Orion. Mm-hmm. So that would have been the crash there. But when Hitler turned against the Bushes, the Bushes family,
because of the oil,
no longer wanted to get the oil from them and wanted to get the oil from Russia, that's when the assistance broke from them, and that's when America got its own UFO crash, so that the books were balanced. The difference was that the Germans, when they went to the power plant, they didn't understand the concept of a bomb, but the Germans understood the concept of flight. So when they looked at the nuclear power plant in the crashed UFO, they didn't decide to make a weapon with it. They said, how can we power the craft? Mm. When the Americans looked at the power plant of the crashed UFO they said, how can we make a bomb out of it? And the reason for that was that you had Einstein. Mm. Because Einstein, being Jewish, had left Germany a year or 2 years before. Yeah. And he was involved in those projects. So that's why the Americans had the bomb and the Germans didn't. Because they both had crashed technology, but they came at it from different angles.
But the Germans couldn't make anything out of it to win the war, or because they didn't develop weapons, or because what was the reason that
you answered your own question. They didn't have energy-based weapons at that time. If you have a true flying saucer, let's use the word. If you have a true flying saucer, you can't put a three-dimensional weapon onto it. Because it would destabilize it. And they tried. They put 30mm cannon. They tried everything on them. It just won't work. But that's why they were working on microwaves. It was actually the Scottish, a man from Scotland in Great Britain, who discovered microwaves just before the beginning of the Second World War. And it was offered to the Americans as a part of the presents America was being offered to bring them in to support Britain during the war. So microwaves were discovered by the British, but the Germans were already working on a different form of microwave. And I think had they had another 2 to 3 years, they would have been able to mount some form of sound weapon in that craft. So the crafts were there, they were available, but they had no means of making an offensive capability out of them. And this is, this is the difference. You see, the ordinary established historians don't understand. When Adolf Hitler talked about secret weapons, ordinary historians think he was referring V2, to the V1 and the V2. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. Yeah. He was referring to these wonderful machines, but they couldn't weaponize them.
Mm. A lot of questions coming up. You can use the technology for the good or the bad, and the aliens who accidentally dropped them, what were their intentions? To give them technology for good reasons or not so good reasons? What I think there are several factions of grey, the grey species.
Yes.
So can you say something
else? Yes. There is a group, very high alien group, very negative to humans, called the Archons.
Mm-hmm.
And the Archons wish to basically turn humans into robots.
Mm.
One of the ways of doing that is to give a very new race, and the human race is a very young and new race, it's not really grown up at all, give it toys that it can't understand.
Mm.
So that was part of the parcel. The other parcel is that if I want to read your secrets, and you are in a hard copy paper world, I've either got to read your mind, or I've got to physically materialize in your building and open a filing cabinet and literally go through it. But if I teach you about digital technology, I can be a million miles away and I can just lift all the information out of your computers and you don't even know it.
That's what we have today.
That's what we have today.
So that's whatever we are using is digital, the cameras?
Well, that's why in both Angela Merkel and President Putin, Angela Merkel has 12 typewriters, Erica typewriters, and Putin has 6. And they both have the most sensitive information is no longer done on computer. It is done on 1936 typewriters, so that they can't be read by the National Security Agency. And the reason they went for 1936 typewriters, there is a massive stock of ribbons. That is the reason they went for it. But what's ironic is that Germany and Russia fought a war in the Second World War, and they're both now using German typewriters. But that is because nothing is secret. Yeah. Everything can be read.
Yeah, everything that's digital. And
yes.
So I probably don't have an idea what can be done, because it's not only technology, but maybe there are forces that can read our mind or see what we're doing without having any bugs here.
Well, there is a very interesting video on YouTube, and it might be good if you can link somehow to it. It's very famous. It's done by NASA, and it's the one where a energy beam weapon fires from Earth, and then it's an alien spacecraft takes an evasive action. I'm sure you're familiar with
that. Yeah, exactly.
Well, what happens is that back in those days, that was Ronald Reagan's Star Wars, that the weapon was accurate, but the software that ran that machine wasn't fast enough to cope with the weapon.
Mm.
Now, what happens is that when in a control room somebody says fire, they read that and they're already moving away before the weapon fires. So what these major space weapons now are all automated. There's no human brain to read. Now, that's why they're getting more success in hitting spacecraft now than they were 15 years ago. Because there's no human... If you're sitting in California or Atlanta, Georgia, and the weapon is 4,000 miles away, that alien piloting that craft isn't going to pick that up.
Sure.
So that's why they're getting them hit. So there are ways of reading people's minds, but there are ways of defending against that.
But the technology, is there the danger of artificial intelligence becoming dangerous to us, like in Terminator, or there's a lot of sci-fi topics that they really go berserk or want to kill us?
It's about controlling, it's not about killing.
Mm-hmm.
The whole object, literally, is to put a chip in everybody and control everybody. You see, 25 years ago, the top end of the negative Illuminati, wanted to destroy 3/4 of the population.
Yeah.
That don't need to do that anymore. That's not the plan. The plan is to put a chip in everybody, yeah, and you can control them. So the plan is very simple. It doesn't matter whether you're in Germany, in Holland, or in Britain, you see not just young people, but everybody walking around with their phone in their hand. That's what they do. Every time you go onto a major street, people have their phone in their hand.
Yes.
So what they do is they say, right, Bob, we'll put an app, an application in your mobile, and now when you want to buy something, you just go up to the counter and you can touch your phone and that does it. Now, the plan was, this was supposed to happen 15 years ago. They've been held up. The plan was they would then say, this is a real waste of time. Why don't we just put it in your hand?
Yeah.
You're so used to putting your phone down to pay for your cup of coffee that you just put your hand down now.
And you don't need money anymore. And so then, of course, you can control everybody because if someone isn't...
Well, exactly, because they'd say you attended a demonstration on Tuesday against the government.
Yeah.
We're turning your bank account off.
Yes.
That was the whole plan, but they're behind. They're very cross because they're 15 years behind with their plan to do that.
That's a good thing.
Oh God, it is, absolutely.
So we're coming from the past to the present, and of course there's many years between that and universes we can talk about. But now we are here, and there was 2012 when we thought maybe that's a year where everything is changing, and then we saw, they didn't really change. But now we see, and my impression is that things are changing. We have 2015, it's not 2012. Do you see a change in humanity? Are people waking up to all these things? And is this a game changer, or where does it lead?
On the 21st of December, 2012, there was a massive change. The problem is that most people wanted the sky to rain fire or the ground to open.
Something to see, yeah.
Something to see. Even in the Bible, you know, it's God, give me a sign.
Yeah.
God sent a flaming bush. So we are in a physical 3D world and we expect that. No, that's not how it is. It's about energy change.
Mm-hmm.
And in all of the major countries, Western countries, crime has gone down since 2012.
Oh.
But what has happened is the vicious crime, the nasty crime, has gone up.
Yeah.
But the overall crime figures have gone down. And that is because good people are getting better, people average are getting good, and the bad people are getting worse. So we are going to have a division between those who clearly understand one way of life and those that cannot change. And that's where we're going. And that is from 2012.
So we have a game between black and white, so to say, good and bad. So and there's aliens, a lot of species, I think. We've just mentioned a few, I think. There are probably more. And they can be good or bad or something in between. Can you tell something more about those species?
The important thing is that when we talk about good and bad, we have to be very clear from which perspective we're looking at. Shocking as it is for your viewers, for the reptilians do not believe them. The draconian reptilians do not believe themselves bad. They believe they have an absolute right to do what they do. So they would be absolutely shocked if you thought they were bad. So we're looking at it from our perspective, but what we use is common rules, common law, and that no one species has the right to harm another. That's my view. You have no right to force another one into slavery. So if we are looking at those who wish freedom, they must be good. And those that don't wish freedom, well, maybe they're bad. So we have two key players. We have the Draconis Reptilian and we have the Archons. These are the two major players. And unfortunately, they're both very, very negative to the development of humanity.
The Archons are not reptilian, or...?
No, they're not. They are more of an energy-based form. They may have a reptilian signature to them, but they are of a very different life force.
I've heard that the Nag Hammadi scriptures found at the Black Sea addressing the archons a lot. Yes. Is that right?
Yes.
And so
well, this is where, of course, where Jesus was taught.
Yeah. And they are how much influence? And is there a fight between these forces, or are they working together? Or?
No, the reptilians would not accept that they were being manipulated. Too proud. But they suspect it, and they know it really. But they get something out of it, so they play the game. But we have a loose confederation of humanoid beings who have a responsibility to Earth humans, who in the last 5 years have formed a council or a federation, whatever you want to call
it. So that's the White Dragons or something? Or not?
No, those would be more to do, my understanding would be what, the White and the Red Dragons. These are ones linked with China, but we'll come back to that. So what I'm saying is that there have always been individual human races who, operating individually, have become involved on this planet to try and balance the books. But in the last 5 years, these groups have worked together as a team. And this is what's causing the change, because one group on its own couldn't counter the negative effects, but five or six groups working together can. And that's where we are at the moment.
You said they are humanoid, but that doesn't mean humans like us.
No.
So they can, you said four, five, or six species. Can you elaborate about them?
Well, what I would say is that all humans originally had 12 strands of DNA. Okay. And sometime between maybe 220,000, 250,000 years ago, the humans were tricked by a reptilian task force and had the 10 strands removed. But the law of the universe is that living matter like that cannot be destroyed. And so it was turned into an energy form and phased between the third and fourth dimension, and that's what your higher self is. That's what hangs over your body. And so when the New Age talks about ascension, that's not really right. We're actually drawing our DNA into our bodies energetically. Now, each of those strands of DNA relate to an alien race. Because through that we have connection to any race really, but any race that has a connection with humans. So a race that's playing a very important part at the moment are the Nordics in terms of Russia, and the Tall Whites in terms of America. So you have a range of beings right across the spectrum, or either just vying for some bit of real estate, as the Americans would say, or positioning themselves so when the change comes, they want to be in on the act. And you know, if nothing else comes out of today's meeting, what I would say is the most important time for humanity is when one system falls, there is a vacuum, and then the humans hopefully get their act together and build a new system. But that's when the danger is, this vacuum period. And that's when we would see someone like an Antichrist or another organization putting itself forward, offering solution and salvation. So that's when you know we have to be careful that people don't come in selling us a solution to a problem.
It's complex. There are these forces who want to work for humanity together, but there's also the negative forces, and they're all working together with parts of governments. Let us take America. Does the reptilian and the draconians have influence on the government, and are there different factions in America and other countries also who are fighting against each other?
Well, the Tall Whites influence the American military. The Draconis reptilians influence the politicians and also the most elite in the money side. So those are the highest families. They are the real movers in terms of that. There is another race, an interesting race. We refer to them as the Anunnaki. And there are some very Anunnaki-looking creatures that associate in America. So America, unfortunately, at the moment, is very heavily led by negative off-world entities. Whereas China at the moment is 50-50. China is receiving, choosing to meet both sides, so positive and negative. And China is, of course, just interested in money, so it's playing a double game. like Russia, of course, now has turned its back on the Draconis reptilians and is now just working with what we call the Nordics. Mm-hmm. The Mossad in Israel, working with some very unsavory off-world creatures. Mm-hmm. So every major country that is a major player or can claim a bloodline will mm-hmm. actually have access somehow to one of these races. Now, if you were in dear old little Belgium or Luxembourg, you don't have access to any of that. But you might have an individual in your government who does. And so that's what these little governments, these little countries do, is they try and bring people into their government as advisors who have links. And then, of course, finally, we have the Vatican. Yep. So the Vatican is incredibly powerful and will make decisions on behalf of governments.
Talk a little bit more about the Vatican, because we think they are not just positive. Some people say there's satanic things going on in the Vatican. Is that true, or are there different factions also in the Vatican?
There are different factions in the Vatican. If you have access to the future, and the Vatican certainly does.
Project Looking Glass, or is this something else?
Well, they have a different way of doing it. Project mm-hmm. Looking Glass is an American military mm-hmm. type of project. The Vatican uses more magical. Mm-hmm. But see, when I refer to magic, to me, magic is not magic. Magic is science. Mm-hmm. And that's how the Vatican would look on it. So they have their own methods for looking into the future. And they look at what we call timelines. Yeah. And they look to see which timeline puts the Vatican on the best possible result. So they'll look at that, and they will then decide how they need to position, who needs to win this election, who should be the Pope, who should be this. It's all designed to try and keep the Vatican in the driving seat. So all of these are key players, but within that there are people who say, maybe we're on the losing side, so maybe we should try and make friends. Huh. Now, that's not actually making friends for the right reason, but it's making it for the wrong reason. But I suppose as long as the hands of the clock are still 1 minute to midnight, somebody could make a change. So that's where we are at the moment. People are deciding before midnight strikes which side of the fence are they on.
And this time is now or in the
future? Well, I think the next two and a half years. Yes. 2.5 years. 2017, really.
And you said there are timelines, so that is of course complicated because there can be different futures. And are they fixed or are they changing? I mean, there are sci-fi movies who are dealing with timelines, and you see it's mind-boggling because there's lots of possibilities. And is it true that we can change into another timeline?
We are on a timeline now that is positive. Mm-hmm. And we've been on that maybe for 15 years. Mm-hmm. Several attempts to take us off this timeline have been made without success. So we are on a fixed timeline, which is generally positive for humanity. And this is one of the reasons that anyone who's negative might want to leave the planet, because it's not the home for them in the future.
You say 2017. Can you say what's happening from now, 2015, in the next couple of years?
Yes,
is there war?
To a certain extent. Well, there have been, in the last 7 years, there have been 3 attempts to start a third world war.
Yes.
Each time it's been prevented. Sometimes it's been the attempt for a nuclear bomb. Sometimes it's been provocative actions. Maybe your listeners will remember some years ago a Russian submarine called the Minsk sank. Well, the Americans got to it first because it was in very deep water.
Kursk,
that was it. Kursk, so, yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'm thinking.
I thought the Minsk. Yeah, Kursk. Yeah. The Americans got it first.
Yeah.
And 3 nuclear warheads were missing. The Americans made off with 3 nuclear warheads. That's why they sent the Americans were the only ones that had a robotic submarine that could go to that depth.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an attempt within the last 3 years to try to detonate one of those warheads. Very clever, because it would not be a lie to say, a Russian bomb has exploded. Do you see how that works energetically?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's been a Russian bomb, a nuclear bomb, and then the media would just immediately assume that that has been launched by the Russians. That was one time. There have been several other times. It's very well documented that Prime Minister, or President, I can't remember, of Israel, ordered his Chief of Staff and the Chief of the Air Force to attack Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And they refused point blank, which is the very first time in Israel's history that any senior general has refused an order from a legitimate civilian government. But they knew it would create a third world war, and that was the whole plan of it. So there have been many attempts, and over the last 6 weeks, America and Britain have attempted to create another war with Russia, which hasn't occurred.
Mm-hmm.
So we are in difficult times, but we're on a positive timeline. So I don't envisage a catastrophic war at all.
But you say 2017 is a year where everything changes and then there's a vacuum because negative beings are leaving the Earth, or how can we imagine that?
Okay. Well, things are already changing. In every country, in every country, it is becoming harder and harder for an elected government to lie to its people.
Yeah.
Harder and harder.
Yeah.
Human consciousness has expanded so greatly that nearly everything is seen and known. The elite still have the ability not to prosecute people. They still have the ability to cover things up.
Mm.
But the truths are coming out. So I don't want the viewers to think that come 2017, that's not. It's already happening.
It's a process.
But what we're looking for is an economic change,
mm-hmm.
because all people are so controlled with money. Money controls people, and the only way that somebody is really forced to look into themselves and to question anything is when their bank is hit, when their money is hit, when they don't have any money. That's the only time people are bothered. So I think what we're looking at is some form of economic problem,
mm-hmm.
which then makes people question their government, and that's like a snowball rolling down a hill. And that, I think, I hope, will be the emphasis that makes people start to question everything.
But you say you hope you can, this timeline, this future is not fixed, it can change.
Oh, yes.
Are we creators like
myself? Oh, yes.
And
absolutely.
Can we change the future?
Well, that's why we needed, in 2012, a critical mass of people on the planet to have moved spiritually enough to show that the human race was ready. And when you have a critical mass of people, if you can actually get them working together, you can really create something out of thought. There is still a possibility that we could be jumped to a more negative timeline. It's unlikely, but it is possible. So that's why I'm always saying I can't be certain.
Sure.
But I'm certain enough that this is the best position we've been in. I know it doesn't look it, but we are actually in the best position.
Yeah.
The only thing is, we are behind our schedule.
We are the positive forces and the negative forces are behind also. So,
well, no, well, yes, but the point is that the humans, in their development, are the last 6 months have been slowed down. That's what I mean.
Mm.
So they're behind. They were doing really well, and then probably. There was a what we call a blanket of energy around the Earth. It was a reptilian energy. It was like if you imagine dropping a blanket over something, it smothers it, doesn't it? It smothers it, and this is what they did. And it's had a slowing up effect on people's spirituality. But also the negatives are delayed, and the negatives are delayed more. The negatives have been delayed on a technological level. And also on an energy-based level. So if we were to look at the two on balance, then the positive side is ahead, but not by much.
And there's a deadline for the dark forces to reach their goal, or?
That's by 2017.
Yeah. And if they don't manage till then, they have to leave?
If they don't manage it, then they'll never gain control.
Mm-hmm.
And those that can...
They know it?
Yes. That's what the Georgie Guidestones were. That's why they were symbolically taken down and smashed, and they were given a date of 2016. Mm-hmm. Those that can leave will leave. Those that can leave have already probably left with all the gold that they could take with them. But there will be an awful lot of people who can't leave. And they'll be the ones that will be running around with not knowing what to do.
Can you elaborate on how many aliens of several species are on Earth? And
very few. Very few. Draconis reptilian, just a few hundred. Mm-hmm. And greys, now, because lots of them have been removed. Again, if we're pushing 1,000, I'd be surprised. Mm. Nordics, just 3, 4, 5, 6. Because they will come in for a meeting and go out again. You don't want people to think that all these alien groups sit there all the time. They don't. Because you can get caught, you can cause problems. So they will come in, have a meeting. This is what happens with the Rothschilds. Once a quarter or once a month, depending, the Rothschilds will sit down with all heads of family.
So they have the chairs with the holes in the back, so for the tails, is that right?
Mm. Spines as well.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. That's always the big wooden chair that sits at the front. And then the families all sit round in a circle or a semicircle around. And each family member has to make a report over what he's done. Mm. And then the entity listens. But they then go. So they don't, they don't sit there all the time.
How do they go? By spacecraft, or are there portals like something?
A portal.
And has it to do with the portals 2017 that they are being closed or something?
Yes. If you think of a mine shaft, lots of coal mines in Germany, and you use wood or something to prop those coal mines up. Over time, they begin to collapse, and you have to shore them up with more wood. Well, part of the CERN collider, the CERN device, was to literally push energy up the portal to push it back out to maintain it, because it's collapsing. That was one of the reasons for the device.
And did it work?
No, it didn't. The machine collapsed, the machine broke. They've got, and that's why they're desperately wanting to revamp it. They got till 2017 because by 2017 this particular portal will collapse. And this is the major portal linking to a fourth dimensional area. And without that, they can't bring any more reserves in.
There's so many questions, and I don't know what to ask next. We have to come to an end of this interview, otherwise we can't talk for hours. But hollow Earth is interesting for me. So the Earth is hollow?
No.
Not at the physical level? You said you come from hollow Earth.
I know, it's the terminology. I don't want you to think of a ping pong ball. It's not like that. It is perfectly possible to bring another dimension into a solid object. And when you create another dimension into a solid object, then the object within that field doesn't exist. So you can have a fourth dimension in a third dimension object.
I see.
But the chair or the table isn't there. So it's called hollow Earth because it appears to be hollow, because you appear to have a community living in Earth. But if you were to send a sound waves through it,
or a probe,
unlike the moon, which is hollow and has given a hollow ping back, but with the Earth you would actually have a solid thing, because we're talking out of phase with a third dimension.
Well, we have access to higher dimensions in the future.
When every human regains his or her 12 strands of DNA, this is... People think that this is what they're about, this is what humans are about. This is not what humans are about. When humans connect with their 12 strands of DNA, they will learn what being human is. We won't need the internet, because we'll have telepathy. Mm-hmm. All humans originally had telepathy. Telekinesis, the ability to move objects around, that's normal for humans with 12 strands. But you see, a human with 2 strands of physical DNA, which is what we have on this planet...
Yeah.
You are intelligent enough to work, but you're not intelligent enough to think yourself out of prison.
Yeah. That's the slave system.
This is why we only have two strands of DNA. But when we reconnect, energy-wise, we will be able to create a reality. And the best way I can describe it is like that. You create a reality here, and the denseness is incapable of reaching your thought, because you have created another way beyond the thought processes of this entity. And that is the only way humans will become free, because they will change their reality. They will change their way they are. On a physical way, it's like if you go to get the bus at 9 o'clock in the morning and you think, right, I'm going to go at 5 to 9 in the morning. So that's a physical, but on an energy way, you can change how you are. And that is what will happen. Because other than that, we will not be able to outthink these creatures who are vastly superior intellectually to us.
Is there anything that we, our audience, can do now to change the game for themselves, to remember what we really are? Or is there any advice for our audience?
It's difficult, because humans generally always want an organization to come in and save them. And I always make the joke about the 7th Cavalry, you know, they blow the bugle and the 7th Cavalry gallops to the rescue. Yeah. And all throughout, on a serious note here, all throughout Earth's history, people have looked for a saviour. And this is wrong.
Doesn't happen. People need
to look to themselves. So I say to people, trust yourself. When you see somebody, ask yourself, is he or she real? Are they genuine? It's what they're saying. Does it sound good for me? That's the way to be. Now, I don't believe in fear, and I don't believe in making people scared. So that's not what this is about. But what people can do is take reasonable precautions. There may be some disruptions in the 2 years to come. Mm. There's no harm in having 2 or 3 weeks worth of bottled water. There's no harm in having 2 or 3 weeks worth of tinned food. And if you have a cat or a dog, bring some of that in. Have a method for cooking. Gas canisters. Mm. But it's not about starvation. It's about disruptions, maybe to power supply, maybe rationing of fuel for motor cars. Mm. So that's how we can prepare on a physical level. On an energetic level, find other people like yourself. Find groups, because at some point the internet will be taken down. Mm-hmm. Not forever, but for a period of time. Mm. So establish contact now with groups. And form meditation groups, send healing to different places. If you think that there's a political leader who is under pressure, send some good work to him or her. So actively take the fight to the enemy. Now that's where we are now. But if a person doesn't want to do that, doesn't want to put their head above the parapet, as we say in England, that's fine, I fully understand that. There's other things they can do. They could do some research, or they could support their friends. So everyone who's good should do what they can to help others. And that's the difference between serving yourself and serving the wider population. So what I'd say to people is, don't panic, trust yourself, and if you can help the human population, please do so.
That's a nice ending of our interview. Of course, we could talk for hours, like I said before, but there's a lot of interviews around on the internet with you, and Henning Witte will do some with you, and it's very interesting. It's been great to talk to you, and I hope our audience will make something out of it.
Good.
And thank you for
the
insight.
Pleasure. Thank you.